Ian Stevenson, welcome.
Thank you, Carla. It's lovely to be here.
That's a pleasure. And you're going to speak up nice and loud, I trust.
I am.
not too booming, but very good. So that we're welcoming you because you're normally taking tours around Oxford. Is it like herding sheep, cattle, or any other herding thing?
That's a very good question, Carla. It can be like herding sheep, cattle, or indeed cats. It really depends on the group. But I think if you establish a rapport to start with, and I always establish three rules at the very start of any tour, where would we be without rules? Then normally the groups are very well behaved, but within the framework of having fun.
Well, that sounds good. Well, yes, you've got to keep track. You've got to keep your eye on the one that that you get left behind. You don't want that, do you?
Well, actually, Carla, it happened once. Ironically, I've never lost anyone yet. And we lost three people. And guess what? It was the Tunbridge Wells Ramblers Club.
Well, that's not surprising then. And so generally then, they're well behaved. But people want to get out of it, you know, different things. Some people are interested in history. Some people are interested in the buildings or the people. What is the general thing, the theme?
You're quite right. Those are the hooks we hang tours on. History is important, obviously, in Oxford. Architecture, hugely important, in my opinion. I am slightly biased. We have some of the most beautiful buildings certainly in England, United Kingdom, Europe, possibly the world. I take people round from other countries and they are just amazed that wow is the most common thing these people say when we're going around some of these beautiful buildings, squares, quadrangles. So yes, history, architecture, and I cannot mention tours in Oxford without mentioning Harry Potter.
Of course, I've got him lined up. We're going to be talking about Harry Potter and indeed Inspector Morse, because that's another hot topic, isn't it? So let's go back to your life in Oxford. Did you grow up in Oxford?
I didn't actually grow up in Oxford, but I went to school in Oxford, a school in the north of Oxford in Summertown called St. Edward's. And after that, I went straight to the university, a college called Jesus College, which is known as the Welsh College because the original idea for its foundation came from the treasurer of St. David's in 1571, a man called Hugh Price. So I went from school to Oxford to Jesus College. And the reason I went to Jesus College was very simple. My French teacher at school at St. Edward's had also been a student at Jesus College, so I had no choice.
So you actually answered your own question then, because I was going to say why that one. So that,
oh, okay.
That's it. No, that's really good. I'm enjoying this. So so when you went there, I mean, is a bit intimidating. I mean, these hallowed halls, and were there famous people that had been at your university?
Well, the first bit, intimidating. I don't remember feeling intimidated because I had got, you know, I was used to Oxford anyway, going to school. If anything, the transition from the first school I went to St. Edward's was intimidating. But the transition to Oxford, no, as I said, because we were all used to it, you know, the environment. Famous people at Jesus College. Well, there are two very famous ones. We had the Harold Wilson, the Prime Minister, Labour Prime Minister, who was Prime Minister, I know you're going to want to know, between 1964 and 1970 and then 1974 to 76, Lord Wilson of Revo. Now, interestingly enough, he was awarded by the Queen the Royal Order of the Garter, not far from here. His banner would have been in St. George's Chapel, Windsor, when he was alive. When he passed away in the mid-90s, his widow, Mary, who, of course, was a published poet, and not bad, actually.
Was she?
Yes, very nice poem, very nice, very simple, very clear. She donated Harold Wilson's banner to the college, and it's now hanging proudly in the college chapel. Interestingly enough, Mary, his widow, died, I think it was last year, certainly recently, aged 101.
Well, I've learnt something already. So did you continue, to be, knowledgeable about Oxford and stay there?
Absolutely not. No, I went. I left Oxford straight away, obviously, and went away to seek my fortune.
Ah, so you've been seeking your fortune for many years. What sort of thing
still
have you done?
Still seeking it.
And so what sort of things have you done in the past then?
Well, having read French at Jesus College, Oxford, I, of course, went straight into banking. This turned out to be a bit of a false trail, so I left banking very, very quickly and went into advertising, advertising agency in London, where I spent a very happy and, entertaining 4 years, and we managed to squeeze in some work during all the partying, client lunches, etc., etc., etc.
Life is so tough. Well, what has brought you to be a guide? And you know, I will play a little bit of music soon, but we'll find out, you know, the things that are involved. You know, we've already know from this little chat so far that you know an awful lot of things. You retain information in your head.
I think that's fair to say, yes, I do.
That helps, doesn't it?
It helps in guiding, it helps in life.
It does, but also you have to do an awful lot of study.
You do. Well, there are guides and guides in Oxford, as you can imagine. There's nothing stopping anyone becoming a tourist guide in Oxford. There is no kind of law, there's no legal status. However, there is an organisation in England called the Institute of Tourist Guiding, who is a kind of controlling body of professional guides, and if you want to become qualified and actually learn about the city or the area that you are guiding in, excuse me, then yes, they run local training courses. The one I did was in Oxford in 2017. As you know, I did a degree at Oxford. Well, this training course was possibly more difficult and harrowing than a four-year degree
well,
at Oxford.
You put me off already. I was going to sign up until that moment. Where was Camelot? Do we know? Do some people say it was Oxford?
Ha-ha! King Arthur founded Oxford, yes, this old chestnut. Well, he didn't, of course, but it's a nice story, isn't it? But no, the king who did really set up Oxford was actually King Alfred, who set up Oxford as a burg, B-U-R-G-H, a burg, which was a fortified Saxon town. Because theoretically Oxford was quite easy to defend, surrounded by the Thames on one side and the Cherwell on the other river. And because it was a border town, it sat in Mercia, i.e. that side of the Thames, and of course you will remember King Alfred was Wessex. So it was a border town, relatively easy to defend, until of course the Vikings came along, because they actually used water to attack places.
So they came up the river then.
Ironic. And interestingly, Alfred and his son Edward designed Oxford on a grid system. So if you stand in the centre of Oxford, which is Carfax by the tower, then you have the four main routes running directly northeast, southwest from you. And that was a deliberate design on the part of Alfred and, as I said, Edward. As we know, English villages are not designed on grid system. They just grow higgledy-piggledy. So Oxford's not unique. I think Winchester has a similar design.
And the thing that most motorists hate about Oxford is the ring road. You go round and round and get lost. Even on a ring road, you can get lost. Well,
yes.
You certainly can get caught in traffic. The idea is, isn't it? It's park and ride, isn't it?
Park and ride. This is the way forward. Certainly, Oxford is deliberately car unfriendly. I'm all for it. I don't own a car. And the fewer cars in Oxford city centre, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
And I gather there's a lovely train that takes you into Oxford as well.
Yes, you can get a direct train from Maidenhead. Even if you can't get a direct train, then the trains are easy from Reading, very, very regular. And then you've got a 10-minute walk from the station, which is, like a lot of walks from the stations to city centres, a bit boring. There's one or two little interesting things going on. But yeah, no excuse not for visiting Oxford, particularly in lovely weather like this.
Yes, and so where do you start your trips? Is it in the centre?
Right, normally two starting points. The Martyrs Memorial in St Giles, which if anyone's been to Oxford, they will know the Martyrs Memorial, that towering Gothic monument to three Protestant bishops, well, two bishops and an archbishop, who were burnt to death in Oxford in 1555 and 1556. I see I can't help getting these dates and this.
No, and a lot of gruesome goings on. A lot of gruesome things have clearly happened in Oxford in the past, but it's a bit quieter now, I trust.
It is a lot quieter now, thank heavens. Yes, it certainly is. But that was gruesome, and I'm certainly not going to describe how they actually perished in the flames radio.
And then the Romans, did they have a hand?
Not much going on in Romans. There's a few villas around, but that's it. No, there's no real archaeological evidence of
very much
Roman activity.
Because as it was a bit of a hub and we had the river, I thought, they would have come up river.
No, and the river wasn't necessarily that navigable.
Ah.
That was another issue, but not much Roman activity. I said
the Vikings had a bit of trouble getting up there, did they?
Yeah, but they were experts.
So, we've got all these beautiful spires, and we've got the river, and punting is a big thing, isn't it, in Oxford?
Punting is huge, and if you've not been punting, you've missed out on one of the great, great joys, delights, pleasures in life. Just, a couple of things about punting. In Oxford, we punt from the correct end of the punt. In other words, the back. In the other place...
The other place. We will find out where the other place is in a moment.
I'm not going to say the word, C word. It is a bad word.
Oh, no.
A swear word.
Am I allowed to say it?
You can say it.
Am I allowed to say Cambridge, just in case people are getting into a hot sweat? Right. Punting. It's not a recent thing, is it? It goes back a long way.
Well, as I understand it, yes, it was used, I think, mainly in the east of England, in the fens, where they used flat-bottom boats with poles to propel themselves along. But not so much commercially in Oxford. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong. But no, this is pretty firmly a leisure activity, because for a punt to be effective, the last thing you want is a fast-moving river, because they're very, very... It's very difficult to control.
And a lot of people... now, I don't know what you call the stick... I'm sure it's got a very good name, or whatever it is that you have to put down into the river, and people get stuck, don't they? They fall
right
off the boat.
Carla, stop. You're digging a hole.
Do tell us. Do
you
tell
call
us
it
how
a
it
pole.
Should be. It is called a pole.
It's the pole.
It's the pole. Of course it is.
And I can tell you've never been punting.
No, I've never been on one at all. I'm sure I'll have a lesson in it one day.
You will, Carl, you will. No, the you're quite right to mention that, though. The rule is, if your punt pole does get stuck, then let go of the punt pole. They all float. If you hang on to the punt pole when it's stuck, then you are left hanging on to the punt pole while the punt has left you in the middle of the river, and then you will slide or fall gracefully.
Do you see this very often? Is that a
bit
of fun?
Absolutely hilarious when it does happen.
Especially people all dressed up in their finery and everything. Because, when is the time when all the students, when they are no longer students, they go out in all their finery?
Actually, we probably just missed the peak student punting period, which is this last term, which is final term, Trinity term, it's called, when it's exams term. So, of course, when they finished exams, then it's a big party. There is a ceremony called trashing, in which case their, in inverted commas, friends will meet them after their final exam and first cover them in something sticky, if they can afford it, champagne, but I believe a drink of choice now is Prosecco. So you get sprayed with Prosecco or something similar, then shaving cream or whipped cream. I've seen melted chocolate. This now forms a nice base for confetti, glitter, and this, that silver, that string, you know, strings in aerosol.
Silly string.
And then you may well go punting in this, because, of course, the best way to clean off is to jump in the river.
So the poor river must be pretty polluted with all kinds of horrible stuff. Yeah.
The Thames has seemed a lot worse.
I'm sure it has, especially when the Vikings were around. We've learnt lots again. So I'm going to now break for a little bit of music. And I've got it all lined up. I imagine there are a lot of punts that are rocking, especially when people are full of Prosecco or any other kind of fizzy wine. And, that seems to be the drink of choice in Oxford. Of course, in Henley, they have champagne. Don't you know? It's probably, I prefer the other kind, actually. But we won't get on that subject. The kind of tours that you do. So they fall into different categories.
Yes, there are different categories. The most popular one is basically a city and university walking tour, which covers the iconic, I don't usually like that word, but in Oxford it's appropriate, the iconic buildings and locations right in the city centre. There's probably less than half a mile of walking. Really, it should be called a strolling tour, and there are opportunities for people to sit down. And, of course, it must include one college of the... Well, actually, there are 44 in total, but that's another story. So it's iconic buildings in the centre of the city, some university, some city buildings, and a college, which is absolutely vital.
Why? You
must go into a college. Because Oxford is a collegiate university. Oxford is unique, except for the other place, in this layout, this design. There's no other university in the world which operates on a collegiate basis. What do I mean by that? There's no campus. You cannot point to Oxford University. It's all over. It's made up of, as I said, 38 colleges and 6 what are called permanent private halls, in other words, 44 in total, plus university buildings. So you have to see a college, because this is what makes Oxford great, the collegiate system. This is why it's still the best educational establishment in the world.
And the other place we don't mention. Now, because it is quite unique, but they are big businesses, aren't they? They're pretty wealthy.
This is a huge business. You're absolutely right, Carla. I'll give you an idea of the spread. The richest college at the moment of all 44 is St. John's, and that has assets, we call it an endowment, which we know about, of £590 million. And that's just one. That is the richest. And it goes down to the kind of low millions for the smaller of those colleges. So I always say on my tours, never feel sorry for an Oxford college looking for money. They've got plenty, and they're very, very good at attracting money. We've just recently hit the national headlines. An American private equity investor has just donated £150 million to the university, and there is now talk that we have a tie-up with the university, that is, with Legal & General, and that's an astonishing £4 billion coming into the university. Obviously, that's spread over time. So because Oxford, the university, is such a global brand and well-deserved, the money, the benefactors just keep pouring their benefactions in.
And in all kinds, I've written yen against this. I gather a lot of yen has come the way of one particular university.
Yes, this is, put me on the spot a bit. I think this is the Japanese shipping company, whatever the organisation is. And I think it's 200 million yen.
Yes.
They've donated. I can't remember where. Is it a university or a college?
And does this mean then that there are scholarships available, because they are so fabulously wealthy, they can actually say, oh, well, we'll help out a few poor students?
Yes, that's a very, very good point. Oxford paranoid is a bit strong, but is anxious to shake off this image of elitism and that you have to be wealthy or come from, an upper class background, whatever that means, to go to Oxford. This is a bit of a myth. Currently, undergraduates, of which there are 12,000, so that's students studying for their first degree, they're probably just left school aged 18 to 22, it's 60% are from the state sector. Wow, you might say, well done, Oxford. Well, not really, because if you look at the total population of school children in the United Kingdom, then 97% go to the state sector. So, but the point is, Oxford is very aware of this. We have what are called outreach programs. All the colleges do this, and these are designed to go into communities across the United Kingdom who would never normally dream that they could ever send a child to Oxford. And we have teams of people going into these communities, persuading them that is not the case. All Oxford's interested in is, can you think? We're not interested in your wealth, your status, how big your mum or dad's car is. It's, can you think? Do you have academic potential? And to answer your question, yes. There are bursaries, subsidies, grants, scholarships available for students who do come from disadvantaged backgrounds. No student will ever be denied entry to Oxford University because they can't afford it.
Well, once again, packed with information there. I'm loving this. And so just to remind you, this is Carla Delaney on Mid Morning Matters this morning. And I my guest, as you will have, if you've just joined us, you'll say, that person knows an awful lot about Oxford. And you'll say, yes, he's an official tour guide. He should know a lot about Oxford. And there's lots of snippets of information we're getting that you just wouldn't get if you just go there by yourself. You look at buildings, don't you, Ian?
Yes.
And they tell a big story, don't they? Each one.
You're quite right. Buildings do tell stories. We mentioned earlier this very, very comprehensive training course I went on to become a Green Badge Guide, a qualified Green Badge Guide for the City of Oxford. And God bless them, their big focus is what they call the TVP, which is your top visual priority. So you must always try to be in front of something which your tour group can see, and you're talking about that. And of course, in Oxford, 9 times out of 10, that is buildings. So we usually describe a bit about the architecture of a building, then its original purpose, and then what it's actually doing now, because obviously that changes over time. A good example is the Clarendon Building. This is the huge neoclassical building you will see if you know Oxford, in Broad Street, opposite the Bodleian Library, the Western Library entrance. And that was originally designed to house the Oxford University Press. The physical printing press was in that building. This became too popular. The building became too small. We built a new Oxford University Press. By the way, new is a relative term in Oxford. New, in this sense, means mid-1800s. Again, a magnificent neoclassical building, but probably 10 times bigger. So the original Oxford University Press, the Clarendon Building, became offices. But in 2017, Oxford did a revolutionary thing. For the first time in our 900 years, we appointed as our head the chief executive of the university. We call it the Vice Chancellor. Wait for it, woman.
Ah. Oh, I bet there was a bit of shock.
Not only was there shock.
Shock and awe.
This was a cataclysmic event, Carla. Fire and brimstone rained from the sky. Snakes came out of the drains. Old professors were jumping off rooftops. But we did it. And she did another revolutionary thing. She moved her offices from administrative offices about half a mile from the city centre into this iconic, there's that word again, Clarendon Building, former Oxford University Press building, and it's now the headquarters where she sits. She's called Louise Richardson. She is a political scientist. Well done to her. She's a political scientist. She taught for a long time at Harvard before coming back to the UK. She is British, and her area of academic expertise is terrorism.
Oh, that is very interesting. It'd be lovely if we could get her in sometime, but that would be good. Well, we are going to cover very shortly some of the topics that you know, people are keen on, and of course there is a lot of TV interest. You know, people, that some people come, I imagine, because they watch Inspector Morse, and he embodies culture. He was upper middle class, British, and enjoys the finer things of life, I gather. Good beer, vintage cars, and fine opera. Sounds very much like yourself, except the cars.
Absolutely right, Carla.
And he had his trusty companion, of course, Detective Sergeant Lewis, who often got... Well, no, I won't say, but he had a tough time with old Morse. What I really like is the fact that Inspector Morse creator Colin Dexter, who I once met, he wrote a clause in his will banning anyone else playing the part of the detective after his death to prevent future actors competing with John Thor.
Wow, would they have done that with James Bond?
Although, I think the original James Bond, he was actually chosen by the author, and others since have, well, they all look different, don't they? Including the man that was in the advert for the Crunchy Bar. Anyway, that's something else. So let's play a little bit of Inspector Morse theme, and then find out bit more about that that program and its impact on the kind of things tourists want to see, and some other programs as well, and some hot topics that people like to. And I've got Ian Stevenson telling me all about Oxford, and he is a tour guide, and Morse does figure quite a bit, doesn't it? I imagine a few tourists want to see where Morse supped his pint.
Yes, Morse is still huge business in Oxford, and of course the spin-offs Lewis and Endeavour. And they'll be filming Endeavour again in Oxford this summer. They seem to come here every summer to film parts of Endeavour. Yes, so Morse, very, very popular. There are specific Morse tours. I don't do them myself. I think you have to be a real enthusiast to, you know, to run tours on a specific topic like Morse. But I often take people into Exeter College, and in Exeter College's front quad on the lawn is where Inspector Morse had his fatal heart attack.
Oh.
Yes, before he was then transported to the John Radcliffe Infirmary, where tragically he died. I must point out that he is a fictional character.
Well, I mean, there's lots of people who think Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, well, Sherlock, he is real, Carla. Come on.
Oh, all right then. Another one that figures in a lot of tours, I imagine, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, again, some tour guides, because of the amount of business Harry Potter has brought them, refer to him as the blessed Harry Potter. But yes, but of course, Harry Potter, absolutely nothing to do with Oxford at all. They filmed three very, very important, what's it called, scenes in Oxford. One in New College, in the cloisters, where they filmed Malfoy being turned into a ferret.
Mm. Poor Malfoy. Although he wasn't very nice, I gather.
He wasn't very nice. No, he wasn't very nice, no. And in Christchurch Dining Hall, called the Great Hall, that was actually the inspiration for Hogwarts. So if you are a Harry Potter fan, you really need to get to Christchurch to have a look at their Great Hall, their dining hall, which is truly magnificent. Don't use the term lightly here, although they never filmed in Christchurch dining hall, the Great Hall. It was the inspiration for Hogwarts. And if anyone's been to the studio north of London in Watford and to Christchurch Dining Hall, they'll definitely see, oh yes, this reminds me of Christchurch. And the great thing about the Oxford Colleges is that all the dining halls look like Hogwarts because they all look the same. There's some are smaller, some are bigger, but they're identical layouts. You have a high table, and then you have the students' tables arranged in what's called refectory style. So basically benches with bench seats, and the halls are obviously decorated with portraits of the great and the good. And, of course, shields. I'm trying to think of what else now. I really should know this, shouldn't I? But the point is that they all look the same. So you can walk into any college dining hall and it looks like Hogwarts.
Is it because it goes back to the times when, you know, there was a lot of feasting? I mean, I could imagine, you know, in some times when there was royalty present, there would be people, you know, sitting rather like that, feasting. So does it go back to those times?
There was a lot of that, of course, and there still is. But the original design is from the monasteries where the abbot or the prioress or the head of the monastery would sit at the high table with the senior monks or whatever alongside them, and then perpendicular to them, the junior monks, the acolytes, the trainee monks would sit in refectory style, which is why we call it that. So those tables are longitudinally parallel, not parallel, perpendicular to the high table, if you can picture this. So it's monastic traditions rather than let's have a jolly good knees up tradition.
Now, we Harry Potter famed for magic, but there is another place in Oxford that's famed for magic, isn't there?
Where's that?
It's the library. Real magic.
The library, the Bodleian Library. Yes, the Bodleian Library. Wow, what can you say about the Bodleian Library? Just some facts and figures. It's got just under 13 million printed items at the moment. Because the Bodleian Library is a deposit library, and because Thomas Bodley, the man who partially funded the main extension to the Bodleian Library in the early 1600s, did a deal with the Stationers' Company in London at the time. This is a late 1500s, early 1600s. The Bodleian Library is entitled to a copy of everything printed in the United Kingdom. Everything. So we had to build a new facility. It's basically a warehouse for the book stacks in Swindon, near Swindon, and that's got capacity for another 10 million books. So eventually we're going to have something like 23 million books. Of course, the question one could ask rhetorically is why today, with all our smartphones, tablets, laptops, etc., etc., why do we need books?
Why do we need books?
Discuss.
Discuss. That is a very good question. I was thinking that when everything is, you know, I've been printing, you know, producing publications myself, and I know I had to, by law, send a copy to the British Library. But I wasn't aware I should be sending something to Oxford as well.
No, you're quite right, Carla. There are five of these deposit libraries in the UK, and the Bodleian is one.
And the magic we mentioned briefly. There's some real magic stored there.
Well, there is some real magic stored there. And when they were filming another Harry Potter scene in the Bodleian Library, this is one of the scenes where Harry, Hermione and... never remember his name. Ron. Harry, Hermione and Ron are studying books of magic. The Bodleian Library did not allow the film producers to use real books of magic. They didn't want them damaged in any way. And, of course, the trouble with real books of magic in the wrong hands, then, well, the magic works. So the producers had to bring fake books of magic. So if you're eagle-eyed in that particular scene.
And, of course, people are very eagle-eyed when they watch films. They like to catch people out, don't they?
Exactly.
So you've mentioned that you personally don't do the Morse tours. So what tours do you do?
Well, the other interesting one, of course, is the ghost tour.
Ooh, like that sound of that one.
When you actually delve into Oxford, you soon discover it's probably one of the most haunted cities in England. We have various ghosts. We have friendly ghosts. I myself encountered Friendly Fred, who is a ghost who haunts Staircase 17 in Jesus College. He often manifests himself in terms of sounds of almost like creaking, groaning late at night.
You have personally encountered him?
Well, I certainly encountered the creaking, groaning one night on a nocturnal visit down to the loos. Someone said it was the floorboards, but it was more than that.
Ooh, that sounds a bit scary. Are there any others that, might frighten me?
Well, yes, you'll have to come on the tour, Carla. The New College Lane is a very spooky lane in Oxford. It's best to do this at night, of course. And the lighting in New College Lane is, although they're not gas lamps now, they've got the old form of gas lamp there, and the lighting is very kind of yellow and muted. It's very atmospheric. Now, there was a tragic story. New College Lane, as you might imagine, backs onto New College, and there's a long wall behind which there is some lush growth today, because in 1379 this was the site of the latrines for New College. And we have documentary evidence that from 1379 these latrines were not emptied for 200 years.
Oh, full of germs.
Full of unmentionables, quite right.
Yes.
Now, the story is, one night a student was paying a visit to the latrines late at night, early in the morning, and unfortunately he fell in.
A very sticky end.
He fell in and drowned. Now, as you might imagine, the modern toilets for New College, called the Long Room, are in the same site. Why wouldn't they be? Although it's all modern plumbing now. But there are stories of students, again, going down maybe late at night, and distant groaning, gagging, choking, gargling, drowning sounds coming up through the drains, the plumbing.
Well, I'll certainly avoid those loos on my visit. Now, we are rapidly approaching the end of this part of Mid-Morning Matters, and I want to find out what other topics that you cover. So they form into several sorts of tours.
Well, there's a general tour. There is the ghost tour. I do take people punting as well if they're not up to it, and I do give people a lesson if they'd like to, because that stretch of the river, the Charwell, from the Charwell boathouse down to what's called the Rollers, is not only beautiful, but there are some stories there, including, I'm pretty convinced, that was the inspiration for The Wind in the Willows. People think it's Pangbourne. I think it's that stretch of the Charwell. You'll have to come on the tour to find out why I think that. Literary, of course. Literature is huge in Oxford. You can do literary-themed tours, starting from Graham Greene right through to Philip Pullman, who, by the way, if you've heard of Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials trilogy is in Oxford this week. And the BBC have been filming Lyra's his Dark Materials as a series, so that's interesting. So literature is a big one. I get requests too for quite specific ones. Obviously, there's a lot of religious history in Oxford. So, for instance, we have some Lutherans coming over shortly. They were very interested in that side of things. It was, you might describe it as, the birthplace of Methodism. John Wesley was a student and taught and preached in Oxford. So there's another theme there. Literature, religion, architecture, of course. We have some magnificent, modern, bold, breathtaking modern architecture in Oxford, and that's a really interesting tour to take, from the Saxon Tower, which is 1040, right through to the Blavatnik School of Government, which is the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, how can people find out about this? Is there a website?
The easiest website for me is very simple. It's all one word, oxfordwalkingtours.guide. That's G-U-I-D-E. Very simple. So it's oxfordwalkingtours.guide, and information and contact details are all there.
And people should ask for Ian Stevenson.
They should.
Indeed. Well, Ian, you have been very informative, really fun. Thank you very much indeed. And as you are a tenor in a choir, I'm going to finish off this section and bring us into the news and welcome in Melvin, who is ready. I hope he's got his guitar with him. Oh, yes, he has. He's got his guitar. So Melvin Ashong after the 11 o'clock news. And I'm going to play out with the Messiah, the choir of Christchurch Cathedral, Oxford. And thank you very much, Ian, for coming in today. I've learnt an awful lot. I can't wait to go on the ghost tour. I will avoid the toilets, especially if they're spooky. And thank you very much. And please stay tuned to me on Marlowe FM. And here is Messiah.